This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get to our breakdown of all the games in the NFL coming up in just a little bit, a little later on this hour. I'm seeing videos and photos come out of the shoot around with the Citadel. I gotta be honest, a little, they call it FOMO, fear of missing out. A little envious. Now, of course, I'll be there tonight calling the game with the Bulldogs tip off at 9 at Cameron Indoor against Duke. Looking forward to that as well. I just have to wait a little bit longer to get in there later on today. We'll have that for you. Coverage begins at 8:30 tonight on our sister station, The City. Tip off at 9. We'll get to our NFL breakdown. We always open up every Monday with our winners and losers as well. If you ever miss anything from the show, such as that from earlier, you can find that on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. When we went to the phones at the end of last hour, the conversation was talking about coaches and this offseason. As I was saying, and this will never happen, the power has swung too far in the direction of the coaches and the agents. They have all the negotiation, all the negotiating power. That's why these buyouts are crazy, and you get these big-time contracts. And the fact that Mel Tucker, who I think has done a really good job at Michigan State, but has he done a good enough job where he should be the second highest paid coach, where he should be making more money than Dabo? I mean, are you kidding? Dabo's won national championships. Mel Tucker has won 9 games. That's the big claim to fame. And he just got beat 49-7 in the biggest game of his career Saturday against Ohio State. And he's going to become the second highest paid coach. But that's where we are, where Michigan State, I got to be honest, for Michigan State, it comes off as, I've used this example before, but a little desperation, a little insecurity, where you're in a relationship with somebody who you think they're too good for you, and so you'll do anything to keep them around. That's Michigan State. Right? They have 2 good months. Mel Tucker's agent probably threatens, like, hey, LSU's interested, and they throw $95 million at him to keep him around. Where I would say, forget that. We'll go find, we're Michigan State, right? If you're really confident in your program or what you're building or what you have, you think, all right, forget you. We're Michigan State. We go hire any good coach. But instead, they gave him extra money to hire him in the first place. Now, it looks like they're giving him this big contract now after 2 good months. To me, that comes off as a little, a little low self-esteem, desperation move for Michigan State, where they do not want to lose that guy because they don't think they're much without him. But, as I was saying, when it comes to coaches, in a perfect world, contracts would be able to be manipulated based off of success, almost like working on commission. Right? When you have a good year, you reap the benefits financially as a coach. When you have a bad year, well, then you're going to have to take a little bit of a pay cut. Your success is not leading to that contract. And that would never happen. And hopefully you don't have a contract, right? Hopefully you don't have a contract like that. I don't think that we would want all industries or the entire world to be like that. You have a down year, you have to give some money back to the company. That wouldn't be very good. But when you're talking about the millions of dollars that these coaches make, it's like that idea that will, again, never come to fruition either, but they've talked about college tuitions. College tuitions have been getting out of control really for decades, and it hasn't been keeping up with the amount of money people are making, right? The price to go to college, the inflation is much higher than most others, than the amount of money that people are making or salaries and all that sort of stuff. And the idea was, well, let's do a study, and let's see how much the alumni from these schools are making. And whichever school is producing the most successful, or, you're making the most money out of that college, they can charge the most. Makes sense. You're going to have to pay more money to go there, but guess what? You're going to make more money than the other schools when you graduate from there. And they said, we'll do this determination. We'll figure out which schools can charge the most for tuition. Seems like that is reasonable. Never going to happen, but that would make too much sense. And I would compare that to the college coaches as well. That if you have a lot of success, of course, we'll pay you a lot of money. But when you have a couple of down years, right, you're going to have to give some of that money back, which is the case for Scott Frost and Harbaugh have done that recently with Nebraska and Michigan. Most coaches won't. And most schools don't even have the power or the ability to try to ask for such a thing or negotiate that type of deal. Speaking of coaches, I wanted to just give my two cents on the rumors we're hearing about coaches potentially moving jobs. And the two most notable ones, Lane Kiffin, with rumors about him going to Miami if and when that opens up, and Lincoln Riley potentially going to LSU. Now, in terms of Lane Kiffin, I have a problem. Russell Wilson did this past offseason, where he put out a list and he did it through his agent so that he could always say it wasn't him. But we know, of course, he had all the input on it. But they put out that list of where he would want to play quarterback. Problem was, on his list included teams that already had a starting quarterback that weren't necessarily in the quarterback market. And I never liked the idea of people gunning for jobs that are currently held. If there's an open position, yeah, absolutely. Right, go for it. But when somebody already has a job, I don't like the idea of, to bring it to my world, if I call the radio station, I said, hey, I know that guy you have on at noon is pretty good. I'll be even better. Give me his job. I don't like that idea. I don't like going after other people's jobs when they currently hold them. And so for Lane Kiffin, for this report to come out last week and say, hey, Lane would take the Miami job if he was offered, I don't like that idea because that job's not open right now. If you said, hey, he'll take the Florida job now that Dan Mullen's been fired, that's different. That is an available job where they're going to go out looking for somebody. I'm a big Lane Kiffin fan. I always defend him, but I don't like that move. I don't like putting that out there. And again, it didn't come directly from him, so he can deny it. And so I didn't do that. But you know where the message is coming from. Of course, that's not going to get out there if it wasn't accurate, if Lane didn't tell somebody that, if it's not true. Maybe it's just a bluff to get an even better contract at Ole Miss, although Mississippi has some sort of, in the bylaws, they can only give their contracts, I think it's four-year deals. So for Lane Kiffin, you don't really have a hand to play because it's not like you're going to get a 10-year contract like Mel Tucker. The school's not able to give that to you. So I think there is some truth to that. If that's being put out, I don't think it's just trying to get a new deal. I mean, obviously, you're after more money. You could do more money without more years. But I think there's some truth to that. That's the one thing I'll say in regards to Lane. I don't like that play when coaches or players, people do that. Like, hey, if Miami needs a new head coach, I'd be in. Well, they have a head coach right now. Have some respect for that brotherhood. But I would say in terms of Lane Kiffin, we have to differentiate better job versus easier job. I would bring this back to the conversation last week about Shane Beamer when we were talking about South Carolina versus Virginia Tech. Better job versus easier job. I think Virginia Tech's the easier job. You could go to the ACC and compete today to try to go win that conference. When Beamer took the job at South Carolina, you knew year one, he's not going to compete for the SEC title. It's too difficult. So Virginia Tech, I think, is the easier job. Does that make it the better job? It depends what you're after. If you're after job security, if you're after just having a better winning percentage, then yeah, maybe it is. But in terms of being in the SEC, right, the facilities, some of the attention that you get, the money, I think South Carolina is actually a better job than Virginia Tech. It's not an easier job. Similar here, Ole Miss versus Miami. Easier job versus better job. Now, Miami does have the big brand, and it's the U, although that's going back 20 years ago. And Lane Kiffin is a Florida guy. He coached at FAU. He lived down there. Of course, his father was a longtime defensive coordinator with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Lane has spent a lot of years in Florida. But I go back to easier job versus better job. Miami is the easier job because the ACC is wide open. And there's tons of talent in South Florida. And Lane Kiffin, I think, would do really well at Miami. And he would bring some of that energy back to when they were the U and when it was kind of a must-watch TV. The offense would be good. Lane Kiffin would be up to his usual antics. It'd be a lot of fun. I'm sure he would recruit well there. But the better job, I still think, is in the SEC where he currently is. And if you want to say, well, Miami's easier, you can compete there, he's already competing at Ole Miss. I mean, they've been, he's cracked the top 10. The only difference to me, other than, look, if you just want to be in South Florida, you want to be in South Florida, right? If you think you'll be happier in Florida than in Mississippi, all right, I get that. Go down to Miami. That seems like a more fun place to live. And Lane Kiffin's always been, a beach water type of guy. But if the only thing that is keeping you think it's you could have more success in Miami, what you're really saying is, at Ole Miss, you don't believe you could get past Alabama and Georgia because otherwise you're already competing. I mean, you're the third best team in that conference right now. You're a top 10 team, really, this year. The only difference is you think that you can't clear that final hurdle to go to the playoff out of the SEC, where at Miami you can. If I'm Lane Kiffin, for personal reasons, maybe I'm more interested in Miami, but from a football standpoint, I think I'm staying at Ole Miss. Now, for Lincoln Riley, we've heard the rumors about Lincoln Riley going to LSU. And if I'm Lincoln, if I'm going to be in the SEC, I'd probably rather be with LSU in the SEC than Oklahoma coming into the SEC. And it'd be like for an experienced worker. You're an experienced, I don't know, just say salesman. I always go back to sales because it's probably the easiest parallel to draw. It's very competitive, just like coaching. And you're looking for a new job. And you could take a job. The two jobs are pretty similar. They're in the same industry. But one is a little bit of a startup. And it's led by guys who have had success, but they're just starting this new company up, and they're kind of learning as they go. And the other one has been at it for a while, and it's a well-known company, and it's built up, and they've had a lot of success doing this exact thing, whatever it is that they're doing now in that industry. Right? Wouldn't you feel more comfortable going to the proven commodity? Where for Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma has been a good program over the years. Of course, it's been one historically one of the more successful programs in college football, but it's never been in the SEC before. And I do think there's a bit of an adjustment there. Whereas LSU, the last three coaches they have hired have won a national championship at LSU. That thing is built up. And for LSU, it's easier to recruit in that state than compete with, say, Oklahoma State. LSU really has no competition locally. They're already built up. I think Lincoln could go there and have a lot of success. The one concern, and I touched on this earlier in regards to Dan Mullen, is just that LSU will fire you quicker than Oklahoma. We just saw that with Ed Orgeron, even going back to Les Miles. You have a down year or two, they're probably moving on, even if you bring them a national championship. Whereas at Oklahoma, I think they've been patient with Lincoln. He's had a lot of success in his time there. Really hasn't. I mean, this is like a down year, and they're still on the fringe of being a playoff team. But he still hasn't won a playoff game. There seems to be that ceiling there. And yet you never hear words of like, oh, we got to move on from this guy. He has the ultimate job security without ever having to actually reach a national championship. So if I'm Lincoln, I probably am considering LSU. My only concern would be they're going to have a quicker hook than Oklahoma. And then allow me to bring this all back to Shane Beamer. We opened the show talking winners and losers, and I think South Carolina was a big winner Saturday by beating Auburn and punching their ticket to a bowl. Now, I said it's the biggest win since the last time they won a bowl game in 2017. And if they beat Clemson on Saturday, that will probably pass the win against Auburn. But in the meantime, I think this is the biggest win in about 4 years for South Carolina, and I don't think that's hyperbole. By the way, in terms of first-year coaches, the last three Gamecock coaches have now all gone to a bowl in year one. One worked out, one didn't. So it's been a little bit of a mixed bag. We'll see what the future holds for Shane Beamer. But for Beamer, we also need to, and I see a lot of people talk about him as the a potential coach of the year in the SEC. It's been a mixed bag for Beamer this year. He's ending strong, but he did have that loss against Missouri in between. And not to take anything away from the wins, because South Carolina was at a talent disadvantage. They were an underdog for a reason. But you look at Florida, they're totally falling apart, just fired their coach. And Auburn has now lost three in a row, and they were missing their quarterback, their kicker even, and one of their better defensive players for the first half Saturday. So you may have gotten these teams at the right time. Now, that's not to take anything away from Beamer. It was a big win Saturday, and I think getting to a bowl game, potentially going 7-6 this year, is a job really well done in year one. But you also had a very close call against Vanderbilt, right? Some ugly wins against, say, like Troy and ECU. And so you still see that there's plenty of room to grow, plenty of things that do need to be cleaned up. But to go to a bowl in year one, that should have been like the goal. This is like the championship for South Carolina, going to a bowl in year one of Shane Beamer. Now, with that said, we got this story from Mary Beth Smart, the wife of Kirby Smart, who went on a local radio station in Athens last week and talked about how close Kirby was to taking the job with the Gamecocks, it seemed. And it's funny, the timing, you know, how this stuff always works out, like just when you're feeling the best about Shane Beamer. And then you think like, oh man, we could have had that guy, right? We almost had Kirby Smart. And who knows how things would work out for Kirby, or if he would still be the head coach today if he had taken that job, 5 years ago with South Carolina. But here was Mary Beth Smart on the local radio in Georgia at the end of last week, I think this was Friday, and talking about the situation at the time, what it was like for her husband Kirby, who almost took the job with South Carolina.
I mean, when he got the call, are you in? Well, hell yeah, I'm in. I mean, you know, there were some.
And you probably felt that way too, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, honestly, when we were really close to taking South Carolina at the time.
Yep.
I mean, that was probably, I know. Probably
that's like
going.
Dodge the bullet there, Mary Beth, not going to lie to you.
I mean, I actually think that, I mean, I guess he won't care if I say this is the truth, that the AD and one of the athletic administration guys were in our kitchen meeting with us that morning that Coach Rick was fired. I mean, it was leading down that road. So
Kirby's like, I'm going to say, hey.
So, yeah. I mean, the way the timing fell for him was really special. But I think he had kind of gotten to the point at Alabama where he's done everything he could do. And he was ready. He was truly ready. And I think waiting really, really made him ready.
So how do you think he prepares then? Because, like, I think the thing for Saban.
All right, that was Mary Beth Smart last week talking about how close it was for her husband Kirby to take the job with the Gamecocks, where they were in their kitchen that morning when they got news that Georgia was making a move, and now suddenly it's like, oh, hold on, wait a minute. I'm more interested in that opportunity. I'm curious how things would work out. And, you know, you're going to a bowl. Shane Beamer's doing a good job year one. There's no use in playing the what-if game, because right now if you're a Gamecock fan, you're feeling pretty good about the spot you're already in. I said last year, going back the last couple of years, I've always said Kirby Smart is Will Muschamp at a better program with better players. Now, Kirby's kind of feeding me crow this year. We'll see if he can finish it off. But it would be very interesting to wonder what things would be like if he was with South Carolina. Would he get them to some sort of SEC title, national championship level? I don't think so. I imagine he would have done better than Will Muschamp. But I don't think Kirby Smart is some sort of automatic slam dunk that you drop him in any program and he'll do what he's doing with Georgia right now. I do think there's a large aspect. Look, for certain coaches, and we're all like this in everything that we do, there are certain coaches where it's more about them. There are other coaches where it's partially about them and where they are. For example, Nick Saban, I do believe, could win anywhere. You put Nick Saban anywhere, eventually he's going to turn him into a winner. Same with, like, an Urban Meyer. Then there are other coaches who may be really good coaches, but they also need enough support as well to succeed. That if you put them in really bad situations, there are some cases that even they can't turn around. There's tiers to this whole thing. The top coaches, I think, can win anywhere. Then the good coaches can win if the opportunity is right. Then the next coaches, like the average coaches, can only win if everything is right. And I think Kirby's in that middle tier where, yeah, he'd probably do a better job, I would imagine, than Will Muschamp did at South Carolina. But I don't think he would have been some sort of savior and fix it all for the Gamecocks and have the same success he's having at Georgia. You put a Nick Saban at South Carolina, yeah, I think he could be a fix it all, even in Columbia. I don't think Kirby Smart's on that level. But it's interesting to hear that audio, the behind-the-scenes look from the wife, Mary Beth Smart. And it's also just the timing is funny when that comes out. It's like when you propose to your significant other and then hear, like, the other girl that you used to be really interested in suddenly just became single. And you think, like, wow, man, just when I was feeling good about this relationship, there's that opportunity over there. Right? What could have been? And for the Gamecock fans, you hear that audio and think, like, man, we were really close to getting Kirby Smart. But as, who is it, Stephen Stills sang, love the one you're with. Forget what may have happened 5 years ago at Kirby and be happy that you're going to a bowl in year one of Shane Beamer. When we come back, we'll break down all of the games in week 11 of the NFL season. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Games from week 11 in the NFL season here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Friend of the station, Scott Eisberg, has made the trip here to North Carolina as well. Now, to take you behind the curtain here, I was in Chattanooga with the football team, so I traveled on my own for this trip. But I was told Scott was actually going to be on the bus and do the whole behind-the-scenes look with the team and put together a great, you know, package for the Citadel. He'll be in the locker room with the guys tonight and everything. So pretty cool stuff. So I believe he came with the team on the bus, as I was told. Anyways, he went to shoot around with the team today, and I just saw he just posted on Twitter, people are camping outside of the arena already for tonight's game because, you know, of course, if you're unfamiliar for Cameron Indoor, the way it works is it's first come, first serve for that, at least the student seat section. And they open up the doors, and everybody comes running in. It's limited to only, you know, it's not a very big venue. It's open to, I think it's 1,000 that they could fit over there. So anyways, Scott posted a video on Twitter. You can go find it now on his Twitter account of people camping out already for the game tonight against the Citadel. You may think it's not that big of a deal, but Scott said he talked to somebody who's already been out there for 25 hours, has no idea where the Citadel is, has no idea what their mascot is, but says he has to be in the first row for at least one game before Coach K retires. So that's what's going on there these days, or at least this afternoon as they're getting ready for the game tonight with the Citadel. 9 o'clock tip-off coverage will begin at 8:30 over on our sister station, The City. And you can listen to that locally or worldwide. It's available online, of course, thecitycharleston.com through the free app and however else you may listen to our stations. 8:30 airtime tonight for the 9 o'clock tip-off in that one. Every Monday on the show, we always break down all the games from the Sunday in the NFL. Let's run through them now and break down all the games from yesterday on the NFL slate.
Colts at Bills.
Well, an embarrassing loss for the Bills yesterday. For the Colts, Jonathan Taylor with 5 more touchdowns and has to now be leading the way as MVP in the NFL in the conversation as we head towards Thanksgiving. For Buffalo, they're now 6-4. And look, they lost by 26 at home yesterday to the Colts as a touchdown favorite. Colts were one of my picks on Friday. I thought that was too big of a line. The Bills, I didn't think were that much better than the Colts. Turns out they're not better at all than Indianapolis. But for the Bills, and we could play this game with really all teams in the NFL because of how up and down the league is, but if you look at Buffalo, they have really only one win this year against a team with a winning record, and that was the Chiefs before the Chiefs have since gone on a winning streak and started to play better. So for Buffalo, and again, you could say this with all teams, you could poke holes in every resume for any NFL team. But for Buffalo, I think they still need to prove something. The metrics have all been good, but they've beaten up on some bad teams. And they got the Colts at home yesterday and got boat raced. It was embarrassing. The Colts ran it right through their, right down their throat for what's supposed to be a defensive team. They only had 106 passing yards. They ran it for 264, and Jonathan Taylor was excellent once again. Buffalo's now 6-4. They're not even in first place anymore. So the Bills got to get some things figured out. The offense hasn't been as crisp. The defense was shredded yesterday. Some work to be done there, certainly in Buffalo.
Ravens at Bears.
Well, this was just a terrible game yesterday. So by the end of the game, you're down both starting quarterbacks. You're looking at a potential Lamar Jackson-Justin Fields matchup, which could be very exciting. Lamar Jackson doesn't play because of some sort of virus. It is not the flu. It is not COVID, but they don't know what it is. And Lamar has dealt with some health issues in his short career so far, so not good for the Ravens that he was unable to go yesterday, and we'll see how long he's out for. Yet the Ravens still win on the road in Chicago, and you don't get Justin Fields for the whole game. He gets injured, wasn't playing well. Andy Dalton has to come in, and the Ravens get the go-ahead touchdown in the final minute to beat Chicago anyways on the road without Lamar. The big story, of course, is just the health of the quarterbacks. How long is Fields going to be out for with a rib injury? What is going on with Lamar right now that he's not feeling well, and how long is that going to keep him out for? Granted, the Ravens are 7-3. The Bears are in a different position where they're 3-7. Khalil Mack's out for the year, or at least he went on IR. Justin Fields now injured. This pretty much wraps it up for Chicago. Some changes are probably heading their way, and for the Bears now, you start to focus on just simply next year and trying to turn this whole thing around.
Lions at Browns.
This was one of those wins for the Browns that you win a game, but you don't feel good about it afterwards. The Browns are favored by 2 touchdowns. It came down to the fourth quarter against Detroit. Cleveland won 13-10 against the Lions. Baker Mayfield played lousy once again. 2 interceptions to just 1 touchdown. Posted a QBR of 8. The fans were booing him in his own stadium yesterday. The Browns have some real problems right now. They're 6-5, but they don't look good doing it. And meanwhile, for the Lions, they had to start Tim Boyle, who had 77 yards and 2 interceptions, a QBR of 6 in his first career start. You'll get to watch him on Thanksgiving. The biggest issue for me in this game, the Lions. You're 0-9-1. You have nothing to lose. And yet, in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal down by 6. 9 minutes left, fourth quarter. They're down by a touchdown. They had a 4th-and-1 at the Browns' 25. You needed 1 yard to convert, and then you would have been 25 yards away from tying. They kick a field goal. You're 0-9-1. And then when they got the football back the next time, they're down 13-10. They had a 4th down at their own 41 with 2.5 minutes to go, and they punted it and never got the football back. Again, you're 0-9-1. You have nothing to lose. Why do you kick a field goal on 4th-and-1 in the fourth quarter and then punt it on 4th down with 2.5 minutes to go? You got to play to win the game. Worst case scenario, you lose again. Who cares? You haven't won all year. That was my biggest takeaway. Dan Campbell has actually been pretty aggressive this year for the Lions, but he was way too conservative yesterday, and it took away any last chance the Lions had to actually win that game. So now we'll get to watch them on Thanksgiving winless this year. Look forward to Andy Dalton against Tim Boyle Thursday for two teams that have a total 3 wins this year. Can't wait.
Texans at Titans.
I told you on Friday I put the Titans on upset alert. Look, the Titans won 6 straight against most of them teams that were in the playoffs last year. This was the classic letdown spot at home against the 1-win Texans yesterday. But this is what concerns you about the Titans. And maybe this is just the NFL in 2021 that everybody is going to look bad at some point. The Titans are 8-3. They've beaten 6 teams from the playoff field a year ago, but they've also lost to the Jets and now the Texans at home. And they got beat up pretty good yesterday. It wasn't even as close as the score would indicate. They were down 19-0 in the second half at home to the 1-win Texans. That was bad. And so this is the concern with the Titans. You wonder, how much can you truly trust this team? Even when they're running off a bunch of good wins in a row, you're waiting for that letdown that you got yesterday. And I'd have to go back and look. Super Bowl teams have had bad losses. Have there ever been a Super Bowl team to lose to two teams that are going to pick in the top 5? In the draft, I don't know if that's ever happened. Maybe the Titans can still make a run, but they showed how vulnerable they are in another game like that yesterday. By the way, Ryan Tannehill without Derrick Henry, 4 interceptions yesterday. Tannehill is 27th in the league in quarterback rating. That's all. And he has just one more touchdown than interception this year. He has not been very good for the Titans, and he's going to have to be really good without Derrick Henry moving forward.
Packers at Vikings.
Well, this was the game of the day. The Vikings getting a dramatic win, 34-31 against Green Bay. And, 34-31 is an interesting number. I think back to 2004, the Packers beat the Vikings both times that year, 34-31. The second time was actually on Christmas Eve, and it was a battle for the division. And they won on the last-second field goal both games to win 34-31. So I had to wait, 17 years? But the Vikings got some revenge yesterday, winning by that score on a last-second field goal as well. Reminded me of 2004, except now on the winning side. For the Vikings, it's a big win. They're now 5-5. They hold the second wild card. They've beaten back-to-back teams with winning records the last 2 weeks. 2 good wins for them. And for the Packers now, they lose their spot at the top of the NFC. The biggest concern was that Aaron Rodgers did not look good in that first half. It looked like his toe was bothering him. Now, in the second half, he did scramble a little bit more. He went in early at the end of the second quarter to get some treatment, and maybe that helped. Because in the second half, he was a little bit more mobile. He played much better. But if that toe continues to be an issue, that turf toe, look out for Rodgers moving forward with the Packers. Because in the first half, he was not mobile. The Vikings were able to send everyone after him. They pressured him quite a bit. Rodgers threw it away at least 4 times in the first half alone. He was much better in the second half because he looked more mobile in the second half. So keep an eye on that toe injury for Rodgers. And the last thing for the Vikings, we always talk about Kirk Cousins not being able to come up big. He had what was almost an interception to lose the game in the 2-minute drill. It got overturned on replay. And then, hey, he led them down the field for two different winning drives in that fourth quarter. Kirk Cousins had a couple of bad throws that should have been intercepted that weren't. 2 interceptions called back for Kirk yesterday, but otherwise played really well in a big win for the Vikings.
Dolphins at Jets.
This is one of those games that you just skip. You don't even worry about Dolphins-Jets. My biggest takeaway from this, Joe Flacco actually kept the Jets in it. I was surprised. Tua played pretty well. He's playing for his job every week. But my biggest takeaway was actually Elijah Moore, who had 8 catches, 141 yards, and a touchdown for the Jets. He's the rookie out of Ole Miss. And when we were at the draft, I said that Elijah Moore, I picked him as one of 2 wide receivers from the first round to have the most success in their career. And it took a while for Moore, but now the last 3 weeks, he has over 6 catches now in actually 5 straight weeks. He's had a touchdown in 3 straight weeks. They're finally getting Moore involved. I think he's going to be a really good wide receiver for the Jets, and he's finally starting to show it here, second half of his rookie season.
Saints at Eagles.
This was a bad loss for the Saints, who now have lost back-to-back and have fallen to that last wild-card spot. They're 5-5 on the year. To lose to Philadelphia like that, and again, this game not quite as close as the final score would indicate. The Saints had to score 22 points in the fourth quarter to make it look close, but the Eagles were up 33-7 in the fourth quarter of this one. And what's most impressive about Philadelphia is the job they've done with Jalen Hurts. Yesterday, they ran it for 242 yards. Hurts didn't have to do a whole lot of throwing. And when Hurts is the starting quarterback, the ground game has been fantastic for the Eagles when they choose to commit to the running game. By the way, the Eagles are now 5-6. They're a half game out of the playoffs in the NFC, and they have the second easiest schedule the rest of the way. Keep an eye out on Philadelphia in the NFC to start to make a run here second half of the season.
Washington football team at Panthers.
Well, a tough loss for the Panthers. Cam Newton's first start, and he played really well. Cam did his part. But the Washington football team, here's the thing. I gave you my picks on Friday. And most of the time, the picks I give you on Friday are the ones that I actually do play in my own personal life. I don't want to be one of those guys that just gives you picks and then doesn't actually bet on them or does the opposite, and he's just throwing things out on the radio to try to sound smart. What I tell you, I truly believe in for everything that we do. I don't do anything for clicks or attention. I'm not one of those hot take guys. I think it's very lazy. I hate that that's become part of the industry, but that's a whole nother conversation. In regards to this game, I took the Panthers as one of my picks on Friday. And then on Saturday night, I had a conversation with a professional bettor who said that the Washington football team was his bet of the month. And he convinced me. And I thought, oh boy, I was wrong yesterday. So I ended up going with the Washington football team yesterday. And it didn't start out great, but they ended up coming through for me in the end. And I thought, man, why didn't you tell me this information 24 hours earlier? And there really wasn't a lot to it. It was more of a field play. But he's saying, I'm telling you, it is the bet of the month. The Washington football team will win and cover. And they sure enough did. Cam Newton did his part. 21 out of 27, 189 yards, two touchdowns, also had a rushing touchdown. He was fine in his first start. In fact, I thought we'd see more of P.J. Walker. I did not think Cam would take every snap at the quarterback position. I thought they would balance the two. But the Panthers now have lost six of their last eight games. They have fallen out of the current playoff picture. And look out for the Washington football team. They're now 4-6. Taylor Heineke's been playing well these last couple of weeks. The defense has been better, and they just beat the Buccaneers and now just beat the Panthers on the road. And they're creeping into the playoff picture. They're only a game out of a wild card spot in the NFC. Really, nobody's out of any, things in the NFC. But watch out for the Washington football team trying to get back into things there in the NFC as they got a good win on the road yesterday.
Bengals at Raiders.
I build this on Friday as one of those, like in wrestling, the loser leaves town type of matches. Two teams that were very similar this year. Both entered this game at 5-4 after 4-2 starts. The difference was that the Raiders have had a lot more noise around them. The Bengals just haven't been playing as good of football lately, have been dealing with some injuries. So this was a big game yesterday. Both 5-4, one trying to leave over 500, and one of those deals that whichever team loses this game, you kind of start forgetting about them in the AFC, and that was the Raiders. Now, they are only 5-5. They're very much still alive at just 500, but the way they've played. They were blown out yesterday by the Bengals. They were blown out the week before by the Chiefs. They lost the week before that to the Giants. I've been saying it all along. It was eventually going to catch up to the Raiders, everything going on around this team, and it looks like it has. They've lost the last two games by a combined score of, I think it's 43 points, non-competitive the last 2 weeks in some of the bigger games of their season. Big win for the Bengals to get back on track, and for the Raiders, you continue to worry about them. I think it was another good start for them, and now they'll continue to just fade away this year. Let's see what else we got.
49ers at Jaguars.
The 49ers did what they were supposed to. They went to Jacksonville, beat them by 20. Jimmy Garoppolo played well once again. The big story to me here is Trevor Lawrence. He's now gone three games without a touchdown. It has been a month since he has had a passing touchdown. In the last three games for Trevor Lawrence, he has been under 163 passing yards, which is not a lot in today's NFL. He hasn't completed more than 16 passes in a month. He actually hasn't had a pass completed of over 24 yards in over a month. I mean, that's not asking a lot. A completion of 25 yards or more, it's been 5 weeks for Trevor Lawrence. You have to go back to October 17th for the last time he completed a pass of over 24 yards, more than a month ago. Things are not going very well for Trevor and the Jaguars. The team's just not very good. You'd like to at least see some flashes from Lawrence. I'm not telling you he's not going to work out or he's going to be a bust, but you'd like to have a little bit more to be excited about when watching Trevor. right? 150 passing yards from your number one pick, even on a bad team, not going to cut it. The team's trailing. They're throwing a lot. He has only 8 touchdowns this year, more interceptions than touchdowns, and he's been in a real rut lately where this Jaguars offense obviously is not good, but you'd like to see a little more flash from the team. You'd like to see the occasional 25-yard completion downfield. It's been over a month since the Jaguars have even had a big play in the passing game.
Cowboys at Chiefs.
Disappointing game for the Cowboys. Now, they're without their left tackle, no Amari Cooper, by the second half, no CeeDee Lamb, but they scored only 9 points on the road to Kansas City. Now, I'll say this about the Chiefs, that defense has been much improved. They've gotten some players back, and in the last month, they're allowing only 12 points per game. This was an ugly game. I was texting with some buddies yesterday about this game. One of them said, watch, we're talking so much about the quarterbacks and the offense. This is going to become a defensive battle. And sure enough, it was. It was 19-9. I don't think it was anything like what everyone was expecting. Dak did not play well. Patrick Mahomes didn't even have a touchdown, and yet the Chiefs found the way to win at home. The story here, mostly about Kansas City's defense. It's much improved, and the Chiefs are now 7-4. But for the Cowboys, going into this game, I said this is a big prove-it spot for both of these teams. I don't want to doubt the Cowboys. It goes back to what I said about the Bills. We can poke holes in every resume. But the Cowboys had beaten just one team that had a winning record at the time this year. And this was a big spot on the road against Kansas City, and they did not play well. Scored only 9 points, lost by 10. Meanwhile, for the Chiefs, they had an opportunity to prove that they are turning things around, and it wasn't just the fact that they played the Raiders last week. And I think they showed that. The offense did not look good yesterday, but the defense is much improved. They found a way to win at home against Dallas. And at 7-4 and in first place, I do think we have to start, you know, taking the Chiefs seriously here as, once again, continuing to be a contender in the AFC.
Cardinals at Seahawks.
Bad loss for Seattle just in terms of the way they played. Russell Wilson came back from injury too soon. He has not been good. 200 yards yesterday. They scored only 13 points. Colt McCoy was excellent in his third start. He had over 300 yards. The Cardinals win on the road. They're now 9-2. Big win for them. Seattle's 3-7. They're heading to their first losing season with Russell Wilson. I'm going to make a prediction now. And again, this is another one. Just like Dan Mullen, you can clip this audio, throw it in my face, a few months from now, if I'm wrong. I think Pete Carroll is finishing up his final 6 weeks as head coach of Seattle. There is going to be some change for the Seahawks. And it goes back to what I said about having patience, right? And I'm not telling you that I think Pete Carroll should be fired, but I think he will. And I don't think it'll necessarily be a firing. I think either he's going to retire or they're going to call it one of those mutual things, but I think he's going to be forced out at year's end. Because we know Russell Wilson already is not happy. Now they're having the worst season of his career. They're going to have a losing season. And if you're Seattle and your star quarterback comes to you and he essentially says, you know, it's either him or me, and you're looking at your 70-year head coach who is a really good coach who's won a Super Bowl before, but he's already in his 70s, or you're looking at a quarterback that nowadays could probably play another 10 years, and the quarterback position is already more important than the head coach, I think the franchise is choosing the quarterback. So I believe one of the two will be gone this year, Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll. But obviously, if you're Seattle, you'd rather keep the quarterback. So I believe Pete Carroll will be gone by the end of the season, and that will help Russell Wilson stick around for Seattle, who are now 3-7. And at this point, you look at the rest of their schedule, it's not easy. They're not going to win many more games, and they're going to finish under 500, probably in last place as well for the first time with Russell Wilson.
Steelers at Chargers.
So this was looking like it was going to turn into a classic Chargers choke. This has been the big thing with the Chargers, that they find ways to lose games. And when they brought in Justin Herbert, they thought, okay, here's a guy that's going to find ways to win games for us. Well, last night looked like they were going to find a way to lose a game. They were up 17 in the fourth quarter. The Steelers took the lead, and it was also how they did it, right? The Chargers had an interception. They had turned it over on a fourth down play to give it back to the Steelers. You know, they had a punt blocked in the second half. Just the mistakes that they make after building a lead. And you're thinking, here we go again. But sure enough, they turned what was going to be a bad loss into, in the end, a good win on a late touchdown drive in the final 2 minutes for Justin Herbert. And Herbert has really struggled in the past month, so it was good to see him last night play as he did, with 382 yards, a quarterback rating of 116. It's been a while since we've seen that type of performance from Herbert and that Chargers offense. That was a must-win for them. And they eventually did get the win to get to 6-4. By the way, Ben Roethlisberger looks much better in his return. I bet on the under passing yards because we've seen quarterbacks come back from COVID and not play well. Roethlisberger played one of the best games of his season coming off of that layoff. Apparently, he needed some time away from the team, some time off where he's just quarantining and doing nothing. He played much better than I expected last night. Still not enough for the Steelers to win.
Giants at Buccaneers.
This is Monday Night Football tonight. And I always give you a pick for Monday Night Football. The Buccaneers are favored by 11 at home. I just think it's too many. Now, this is a bounce-back spot for Tampa. They lost last week against Washington. Tom Brady stormed off from the post-game press conference. It was not a good day for Tampa. Now they're at home, extra time to prepare, and you get the 3-6 Giants coming to town. I would not be surprised if Tampa takes it out on the Giants tonight and puts it on them, you know, especially from Brady in the offense. But with that said, 11 is just a lot to swallow. I'll take my chances, and we'll take the Giants with the 11 points. I think the Buccaneers win tonight, but I'll say the Giants keep it under 11 on Monday Night Football tonight. But Brady has not played well the last 2 weeks. He needs to play better, and this is his chance here tonight at home against the Giants. And there you go. There's our breakdown of Week 11 in the NFL. Let me also say, on that topic, Brady really kind of stormed off from his press conference last week. Baker Mayfield blew off the media yesterday after another bad performance when he was getting booed. Pete Carroll blew off the media after their loss yesterday, saying, "I'm not very good at this after losses." I know it may not be an ideal part of the job, and I know I may be biased because I'm technically part of the media that likes, you know, the media. That's why you do these press conferences for the media. They're the ones gaining something out of it. But I never liked when players blow off those obligations, especially if you do it after a loss. Anybody can talk after a win. Right, for Brady, after a loss, to blow off the press conference, after a win, sure, I'm sure he's happy to talk about his touchdown passes. Right, Pete Carroll, after a win, I'm sure he's happy to stand up there and tell you how smart he is. I don't like that. Anybody can talk when things are good. What about when things aren't so good? Can you get up there and either defend, you know, your performance, your actions, explain what happened, talk about it? Can you stand up in the face of adversity? That's what I want to see. And it's happening more here the last 2 weeks. Brady blew off the media last week, Baker yesterday, Pete Carroll yesterday, all in losing efforts. I don't like that. We all have bad days, right? Some days maybe you do call out of work sick. But if you opted out anytime something didn't go right, I mean, you wouldn't get very far, right? Like, there are certain days here I got to talk for 3 hours on the radio. I got a game tonight. Certain days I don't feel very well. But you know what? You got to power through. You can't just say, "Hey, I don't feel very well. I'm not going to do it today." No, you still try to bring your best. For Tom Brady, maybe you didn't play very well last week. You lost. Well, you can still get up there and answer some questions. It's part of the job. And you're happy to do it when things are going well. You should be willing to do it when things aren't going so well. So that's my little rant on that, because it happened again twice yesterday. I don't like this trend. You lose a game and you blow off those obligations. Anybody can talk when things are going well. But you should also be able to talk when things aren't going so well. We'll wrap up your Monday when we come back. I teased this earlier. I'll get to it next. We're always so worried about the college football playoff, but you know what? It's just going to play itself right out perfectly this year. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Finished your Monday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. As always, spend the Mondays breaking down everything from the football weekend. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. On Twitter, Henry said, "I think most of us Gamecock fans are pretty happy with Beamer right now. Love his enthusiasm and the culture he appears to be building. Most of us have been unhappy with the offensive coordinator, but he called a pretty good game on Saturday. No mention of the UConn score." He throws it at the end. Well, I love that you said the UConn score and not the South Carolina score. I mentioned it earlier, in the first half and the second half, but not the final score. It, of course, has gone final by now. Big win for South Carolina. They beat UConn in a matchup of 1-2, 73-57. So, obviously, anytime you beat UConn, that's a big deal. And the Gamecocks are as good as they have been over the years under Don Staley, have still struggled with UConn. But also the fact that they were down 13 in the first half, and they won by 16. So they outscored UConn. Let me try to do this math here live on air. They outscored them by, that would be 29 points in the last 20 minutes. And let me see here. When were they down 13? In the last, let's just say about 28 minutes. In the last about 28 minutes of the game, they outscored them by 29. And they weren't playing all that great early on, the Lady Gamecocks, with some turnovers and empty possessions. But they turned it on second half. And really, the last two and a half quarters there outplayed UConn by almost 30 points. So that is a big-time win for South Carolina. Why it was tipping off at noon on a Monday, I have no idea. But regardless, still a good win for Don Staley, a really good win for Don Staley's team. In regards to Beamer, yeah, I was saying it earlier in relation to Kirby Smart, but also the fact that, you know, they're going bowling in year one. You can get to a no much quicker than a yes, and that's the case with Beamer. We don't know if he's a yes yet. You know, if he's a yes to the question of, is this the guy? We don't know yet. It's gotten off to a good start, 6-6. I would point to, you know, to point to the game against Vanderbilt and ECU and Troy, some of these other games. The loss to Missouri wasn't a good one. You know, you could point to some of the losses along the way that, or even the wins that haven't looked great. But overall, 6-6, you're going bowling. That is a good first year. And as I said, you can arrive to a no much quicker than a yes. You can know somebody is not the right coach before you know if they are the right coach. And that's what is important in year one, that we pass the no portion, where you watch this first year, you would know if he was in over his head, if he was not cut out to be a head coach. Is he going to be able to accomplish everything you hope? We'll find out. But we know that it's not a train wreck. It's not a Steve Wilkes 1 year, Jimmy Lake year and a half at Washington, Willie Taggart, however, what was he there, 2 years? You know, it's not one of those situations where you realize very quickly, like, oh, yeah, this is not going to work. That's not the case here. He has something certainly to build off of in year one. Just like when you're trying to figure out somewhere to eat and you and your wife can't pick, oh, I don't know, where do you want to go? Oh, I don't know where. And then somebody finally throws something out. They say, what about Chinese? Oh, no, I don't want Chinese. You know what you don't want. You may not know yet what you actually want, but you can get to a no quicker than a yes. Similar at Beamer. Right, you could, by the end of this year, you could know, oh, he's not cut out for this job. That's not the case. Is he going to be able to take them to where they want to go? That's to be determined, but at least he passed that first test that a year in, you don't come away thinking like, oh, this is a disaster. He can't be a head coach. And in regards to the offensive coordinator, I do think Satterfield has done a better job these last couple of weeks. I thought he was the better play caller on Saturday. I'd still think about making a change if I'm Beamer. But in terms of the last couple of weeks, I think he has done a better job than he was doing the first about half of the year. Citadel basketball tonight against Duke. We'll get into all the playoff stuff tomorrow with the college football playoff. The point, though, is, you know, for all this concern, things have a way of working themselves out. We're wondering, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, the Big Ten, they're having their own playoff. Alabama or Georgia, they're having their own playoff. Oregon in the Pac-12, they answer that question for us. We spend all this time worrying. It's just going to work itself out anyways. Duke and the Citadel tonight. 9 o'clock tip. Coverage begins at 8:30 on the city. Can't wait for it. Looking forward to it. And let's hope the Bulldogs keep it close as well. Otherwise, we'll be back here tomorrow at noon. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we'll say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.